maybe we should note
lack of absence.
When
our lack of presence.
Yeah. So when was the last time we recorded?
It was. I'm not sure.
It was a long
August.
It was a long time ago. It's
maybe
been
July.
So it's been months, everybody, since we did a podcast.
Months.
We should maybe give good reason for that. We've been busy with other things. So
slightly, yeah.
Austin's YouTube channel is really doing stuff, and I've been traveling. So here
yes.
we are. It's good. It's a good time, though. So back for another batch of recording. And this one is going to be interesting because we're starting today's podcast off about Victor Hugo.
Well, which, welcome back to the podcast, everybody. This is the Mindcastle podcast, where we talk about what we're doing and learning in life and share with you guys. So, Victor Hugo. Do you know anything about Victor Hugo?
Hardly.
Good.
Honestly. So, enlighten me, please.
All right. This was my first introduction to Victor Hugo. This is from Atomic Habits, chapter 14. How to make good habits inevitable and bad habits impossible. In the summer of 1830, Victor Hugo was facing an impossible deadline. 12 months earlier, the French author had promised his publisher a new book, but instead of writing, he spent the year pursuing other projects, entertaining guests, and delaying his work. Frustrated, Hugo's publisher responded by setting the deadline less than 6 months away. The book had to be finished by February 1831. Hugo concocted a strange plan to beat his procrastination. He collected all of his clothes and asked an assistant to lock them away in a large chest. He was left with nothing to wear except a large shawl. Lacking any suitable clothing to go outdoors, he remained in his study and wrote furiously through the fall and the winter of 1830. The Hunchback of Notre Dame was published 2 weeks early on January 14th, 1831. So, yeah, just, you know, based off first impressions there, what do you think of this guy?
It's actually a really good concept. So if you limit access to things, that it is incredible how it'll change your behavior.
Oh yeah.
Like there's all kinds of study on, I forget the exact, I think it's like the 20-second rule, for example. If you have trouble with snacking and you should not eat so many snacks, so many potato chips, if you literally put them 20 seconds more effort away from you, the chances of you eating them go way down.
Oh yeah.
Because the extra effort to walk over to the cabinet, dig them out of a drawer all the way in the back, and like if you make extra effort. So he is basically forcing himself to do what he knows he should do, even though he doesn't want to.
Right.
And so a little bit of context. Should we tell people who Victor Hugo is?
Yeah, go ahead and give us a little backstory there of who this dude is.
Do you want to mispronounce the name of his other book?
Les Miserables is?
Les Miserables. So I'm not French. I'm sure I'm butchering it. But that is the one he'd be more famous for. It's a musical as well. He did a lot of theater plays. So yeah, this guy was very successful, literarily speaking. He wrote a number of very large famous novels. So Les Miserables, if you look at, I have it sitting right here. This is over 1200 pages of like size 9 font. It's huge. So much work. And I think you made a YouTube short about this, about writing books.
Yes, I did.
Back in the day. Oh my word. Can you imagine sitting there before the fountain pen is invented? This is early 1800s. I don't know. When was the fountain pen invented?
It was like 1860 something.
Okay. So this is before the fountain pen. So he's what? Writing with like a feather.
Or, okay. They had pens that weren't like, they didn't have a fountain pen tip. So they wouldn't regulate the amount of ink that came out. So it was all based on how much pressure you pushed, but you still had to like refill them and like dip them.
Oh, wow.
So think like calligraphy pens. So they did have pens technically. So like a quill, you would have literally had to go yank a feather out of your chicken every like couple days because it would have like been used up.
Oh, that's just so, that's such a,
this is a little bit better than that. So yeah.
So he, I'm trying to figure out the word count for some of his books, and I'll look that up later. But essentially, like, it's a lot of work back in the day to actually write a book. Plus, you would have to be careful about smearing the ink. So anyways, the point being, it takes a lot of effort. Even now, it takes a lot of effort to write books in comparison, much harder back then. So yeah, this fellow, did a lot of things with his life. He wrote a lot of plays. He did a lot of poetry. He drew over 4,000 drawings in his career. He was into politics, like a very busy fellow. And I wonder at this point, he would have only been 28 at this point. But I wonder if he had done enough things that he realized he knew himself well enough that it was like, I just had to make myself do this because I know it's good for me. Mm. I don't know. But the amount of self-motivation to do... to lock all the clothes up in a chest somewhere. That's just pretty, that's like pretty savage, I gotta say. So I think I want to read the next line after the paragraph you said.
Yeah, go for it.
And this, I noted this in my notes system. Sometimes, following up on what Austin just read, sometimes success is less about making good habits easy and more about making bad habits hard, like making the distractions difficult, and how far that can go in actually pursuing the things that you value and the things that you want to achieve. Because you know there's something, like all of you listening right now, you know there are certain things right now that you really should do, like important and worthwhile things, and you're putting them off for some reason. Like I can think of like 12 right now if I were to actually think about it.
Yeah.
And sometimes sometimes motivation is an elusive thing, and you have to just like set external parameters and say, I'm just going to make this thing work and make it happen.
Yeah. And this is all coming from Atomic Habits, where he spent the first half of the book talking about how to make good habits. And now he's talking about how to remove bad habits. And this is the flip of the part of making good habits is make it easy, he says. And you've heard the 2-minute rule, right? Where, you know, something is takes less than 2 minutes, just do it right away. Well, that actually is kind of a misrepresentation of the 2-minute rule that he talks about in this book, which is if you are starting a new habit, you should be able to do the first part, like you should be able to do the habit in 2 minutes or less, or it's too difficult. Because like basically saying chunk it down so that it is accomplishable with 2 minutes. Like if you can't start your workout in less than 2 minutes, like then it's too hard. Basically like break it down even more if you have to. And so now he's flipping it around and saying, make it difficult, make it hard to do. And
So just to recap. So making the good habits ridiculously easy.
Yeah. Like laughably easy.
And then making bad habits that you don't want or things you shouldn't be doing, make them really hard.
Yes.
I heard, what's his name? He writes the blog Barking Up the Right Tree, I think is the right name. And his last name is Barker. So it's awesome. He writes this really entertaining blog. Ah, man, now I can't remember his name. Somebody Google it and put it in the notes. But he said, when you're trying to do a good habit, a good one is floss your teeth. I went to the dentist for a cleaning and they're like, hey, have you been flossing? I'm like, yeah, not really. And they're like, okay, seriously, you got to change that. And this fellow, Mr. Barker, I can't remember his full name, said, okay, take something like flossing. Really good for you. You need to have that habit, but it's like, nobody wants to do it. He said, just make it so easy. Floss one tooth. Like, just say, I'm going to floss one tooth today.
One tooth.
Just one tooth. It'll take me 10 seconds. I'm going to floss one tooth. And he said, if you can do that, your brain was like, oh, well, okay, I can floss one tooth. And then when you floss one tooth, well, there's another one right there. And before you know it, you've flossed for the day.
Exactly.
And I'm like, oh, that is so good.
Yeah, that's
what this is. He probably got it from this book.
Really cool.
You go, you continue down, and I'm going to try to find this guy.
So first of all, The Hunchback of Notre Dame is 510 pages. So writing that in 6 months is pretty crazy. What we want to talk about now is what Victor Hugo used in making this difficult, and what it's called is a commitment device. And I love this. So a commitment device is, I'm quoting from the book, a commitment device is a choice you make in the present that controls your actions in the future. It is a way to lock in future behavior, bind you to good habits, and restrict you from bad ones. When Victor Hugo shut his clothes away so he could only focus on writing, he was creating a commitment device. And I really, really love this because present you or me wants all of these things. We want to do these good habits. We want to be healthy. We want to be fit. We want to get our work done. But future us is kind of slippery. Our future self really doesn't like doing these things. And so this is why I love this so much, because it's called time inconsistency. And what time inconsistency is it basically means that the future looks really appealing while it's in the future. Like your future actions look incredibly awesome until you get there. And then you realize, oh, this kind of sucks. And so this is a way of locking that in. Basically making a choice now that's going to control your actions in the future or make it really, really difficult. Like you said, move the potato chips so it takes 20 seconds to get away. So for me, I deleted my social media apps from my homepage. So now in order to open them, I have to literally search for them. and find them. So it just adds one extra layer. It's making it a little bit harder to get my, to open it. You know, just stuff like that. I really like that idea of locking your future self into a behavior. It's pretty cool.
That's really good. And for, I looked it up. So it's actually, the blog is called Barking Up the Wrong Tree, and it's by a guy named Eric Barker. So anyways, start with flossing one tooth. That just, it, yeah, make, break it down, make it simple. Very important. So we're looking at the book Atomic Habits here, which, by the way, it was so good. I read it twice last year.
Yeah, same actually.
It was the number one best-selling nonfiction book in the world, I think, last year or something. And there's good reason for that. It is really worth your time. By James Clear, go buy it. You won't regret it. The core of the book, just to backtrack a little and zoom out, the core point is this. To quote, it's so easy to overestimate the importance of one defining moment and underestimate the value of making small improvements on a daily basis. You should be far more concerned with your current trajectory than with your current results. You get what you repeat. Mm-hmm. And he's basically just saying that's why habits matter. I think it's pretty easy to go listlessly through life and not really pay attention to our day-to-day habits. But you are what you repeat, and you are what cumulatively builds over time. He has this thing called the 1% rule. If you can get 1% better at a task every day, which actually feels really obtainable.
It does.
Suddenly it's like, wow, you look back over 6 months and you are suddenly in 6 months, an expert, basically, because it compounds and builds on itself.
Right.
You're familiar with Matt Diavella, the YouTuber? Mm-hmm. Not that I really watch him, but he released something recently that really caught my attention. He has a training course now, like all big YouTubers do, I guess.
Right.
But the name, I saw it somewhere on the internet, and it's called the Slow Growth Academy, which I love. And he's majorly inspired by this book, saying, if we can train you how to get 1% better with, you know, I think in this case, it's like building a YouTube channel, I think is what it is.
Probably.
You know, and you can get like 1% better every day and just like keep building, and eventually it'll compound. And 6 months, you'll turn around and look back and be like, whoa, how did I end up here? This is amazing. That's the power of habit. Hence the name of the book, Atomic Habits.
Right.
They build and develop and grow and morph. And
they're so small, but like they're incredibly powerful.
Hence the, atomic, very small. Microscopic, but it has outsized impact on your life. Right. I don't know. You should just get the book and read it. Like there's another key point is, forget about goals and focus on systems instead. So like being goal oriented isn't bad, but like, okay, what happens on New Year's? Everybody sets goals for the new year and the vast majority don't do them. That's called setting a goal, but then they didn't set up a system to actually achieve that every day, like some kind of system to hold themselves accountable and actually like try to build that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to lose weight, but then they don't build a workout plan to actually do it. You know, it's like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Sheer willpower won't get you there.
Yeah.
Maybe it will. Most times it won't.
Usually not. One thing I like, which I don't know, it's going to be hard to kind of give a brief recap of this book. One of the, Reagan talked about a few of the key points. This is one I actually made a YouTube short about because I loved it so much. He says that our habits define who we become, and we become our habits, basically. Like, you become your habits. And basically saying identity, like, if you can change from the inside out versus the outside in. So outside, changing that is the results, like, I want this to be better. I want to do better here. I want to do this. That changing from that way is a lot more surface level and a lot harder to sustain versus I want to become the kind of person that does such and such. So there it's starting from inside of you working out, starting with your character. Mm-hmm. And the word identity literally means repeated beingness in Latin, which is super cool.
Oh, I did not catch that part. Okay.
So then one of the things he talks about here is at the very beginning of the book, but he says every habit is like a suggestion. Hey, maybe this is who I am. And every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become, which I really, really like. Yeah. There again, it's like small habits, small decisions, floss one tooth. It's you basically, you're casting votes for yourself. And saying, this is the kind of person I am, and I'm going to become this kind of person. And so this is one thing he says, is decide the type of person you want to be and prove it to yourself with small wins, which I really like. And so, yeah, I guess just like a super broad over recap of the book, because talking about habits is kind of, it can sound like it would be a lot of information, very complicated. He boils it down really well. It makes it very simple. So there's four laws. The first one is, so there's cue, craving, response,
which
reward.
He actually gets that from The Power of Habit, which is another book that's well worth your time by Charles Duhigg, I think is how you say his name.
Yeah.
So he's building these laws off those concepts, basically.
Right.
So this is so cool because I have all my notes and they're just sitting right here.
I'm actually in the process of taking notes for this book. So I've got like half.
Yeah. Like that was the thing. I read it.
So I'm like, and then when I went
to go back through to like take the notes on it, I essentially just reread it again because there was so much goodness in here. So
right.
the four laws.
Yeah.
The four laws on building better habits.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say them or should I?
I'm trying to find the... Okay. Anyway, each of them correlates.
It's page 49.
49?
Yeah.
Oh, I was getting there one at a time.
See? What?
No, it's not.
People, this is why you take notes. Oh, it's not?
Oh, wait. Yes, it is. I was looking for a diagram.
All right. So the first law is make it obvious.
And that is correlating to the cue.
Yeah. So it's like, so for myself, there's a lot of different ways you could do this, but I have a habit tracker system that I've built into my whole life operating system inside Notion, which is a whole nother topic that we'll cover another day, maybe.
Probably
and
not.
And every day, yeah, every day it generates a database table that says, here's the habits that I want to do every day. And it's like a checkbox. And then each day, it's like right there in my main page system. These are the habits. It's super obvious, you know, and I can't get around it. They're right there. And if at the end of the day, when I'm doing my daily review or whatever, I can look at that list and I can see if something wasn't checked. I'm like, I failed on that habit. I didn't really stay on top of what I'm trying to do, you know, and then you can review those on a weekly and monthly basis, which is really important because they accrue and build, like we were saying, getting 1% better. Make it obvious. He can do this in any number of ways.
Right.
Write them down on a note card the night before. And it's the first thing you see when you get up in the morning, you know, whatever. It's kind of up to you. The point being, make it obvious and deliberate. It's not like it just, our habits tend to happen just by kind of default path of least resistance, which is that's not good.
So you have cue, which is make it obvious. And then you have craving. And so here he says, this is for building a good habit, make it attractive. Make it something that you want to do that will be you will be rewarded for doing it. We'll move through these pretty quickly because we're running out of time. But the third step is response, which is make it easy. And he has a whole, each one of these laws has a portion in the book talking about how to do this. This is, you know, the 2-minute rule, that sort of thing that I described earlier. Make it very, very easy to just do it, to just start. And then the last one is reward, which is the fourth law, which is make it satisfying. Have an immediate reward, you know, habit tracker, things like that you're talking about. And then the flip side of that is breaking a bad habit, which is make it invisible, make the cue invisible, make the craving unattractive, make the response difficult, you know, make it hard to do, like increase the friction on that, and then make the reward unsatisfying. Yeah, he breaks these down incredibly well. Like, man, I would love to know the age range he was shooting for with this book, but like, I would have easily understood this when I was like 12.
Oh, I know. It's super,
so
super
simple.
Clear.
Yeah.
It's super clear, but like really rich too. Like, I read it twice because it's like, wow, this is important.
It's probably the simplest because I've read other books on habits and just walked away and I was like, what did I just read?
Yeah.
Like
it's funny because his name is literally James Clear, the author. And it's such a clear book on habits. Ha ha ha. Anyways.
Yeah.
I always thought the irony was kind of neat because I've read a bunch of books on habits and this one is the one that has the most clarity.
And it's like, by far.
Fits with his name. Anyways. I found the last one to be really good. Make it satisfying. Yeah. So like if you think through like, who do I want to become? And, I want to be this kind of person. And there's immense satisfaction in that.
Yep.
You know,
there is.
And then you work backwards from there. You start, I'm reading another book right now, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, right? You start with the end in mind. This is who I want to become. I want to become that. Okay. Now we work backwards from there. What are the habits and the systems? Again, systems, very important to actually get me there. And then you can build a bit of a plan actually and say over the next however long, I'm going to develop these kinds of habits and build these systems in my life to become this kind of person.
Right.
And yeah, sure, you won't always achieve it perfectly, but you'll do way better than if you don't do that. I mean,
way
for
better.
Sure. And that can be part of making it satisfying. Or if it's just something that's really boring, like cleaning your room or sweeping the floor. Figure out a way to make that satisfying by pairing that not very fun activity with something you do enjoy.
Yeah.
Which I found really fun. So it's like, oh, you need to clean your room, but you can only listen to your favorite podcast while you're cleaning your room.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly now you want to clean your room because you want to listen to your favorite podcast. And then every time you think of cleaning your room, you think of something fun and interesting and something you want to do. I found, I hate driving. I despise driving from the depths of my soul. I have a visceral animalistic response of hatred against drive. I don't enjoy it. I traveled my heart out. It's so sad. I used to love traveling, but I was on the road too much and I just ruined that desire in my body. But then I got this wonderful app called Scribd, whatever, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast, but I love it. Audiobooks, unlimited for $11 a month or whatever it is. And so now, whenever I drive, I can listen to an audiobook. And I'm like, I love driving. Like, I just can't wait to, like, you know, whatever, go somewhere and I can catch up on my audiobooks, because I kind of make it not a hard and fast rule, but generally I won't listen to an audiobook unless I'm driving. Because then, anyways, I found that to work really, really well. Make it satisfying. Figure out who do you want to become. And then the four laws: make it obvious, make it attractive, make it easy, make it satisfying. Mm-hmm. And then a bad habit, all you do is reverse those. Yep. Make it not obvious. Make it unattractive. Make it difficult. Make it very unsatisfying. And suddenly your bad habits will just kind of fade away.
Yeah. Victor Hugo.
Victor Hugo.
All those things.
Victor Hugo. He made it too embarrassing to have people over, so he could only write. You know, that's just hilarious. Next time I'm writing a book, I'm going to lock all my clothes up somewhere. That's just, man, that's hardcore right there. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Cool. Well, anyway, we should wrap this episode up. Hopefully that gives you a clear picture of habits. Okay, we're gonna record a few more for you and we're gonna try to do better at getting more podcasts out for you guys, but you know, life is life, but it is hard sometimes.
I was out of the country, so
it's a little hard. Yeah, but we do really enjoy it, and hopefully you guys enjoy it as well. If you do, leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen,
and always hit us up on Twitter, because we love to hear from you guys. By the way, speaking of Twitter, now that Elon Musk has bought Twitter,
right?
It's a hot dumpster fire over there right now. But hit us up on Twitter, because we both love Twitter. I hope Twitter is going to be good, because I love Twitter.
Yeah.
So hit us up on Twitter what you think, and Twitter's, if you have great ideas or questions, because we're all ears. So.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. All righty. Thanks for listening. We will catch you in the next one.